So what I want to do today is essentially to use, to start, essentially to introduce to you the notion of minimal models, which is an infinite family of two-dimensional conformal field theories that are exactly soluble. And we will see that all of the technology that we've been developing, we can borrow very effectively to solve these theories. And remember that in order to motivate what we're doing is, again, one motivation for these minimal models is that at the beginning of the course, we explained that the dynamics of continuous phase transitions are described by conformal field theories or fixed points of normalization group. And the point here was that as you create the critical point where the continuous phase transition happens, you get the system exhibits infinite correlation length, and the system looks the same at all length scales. And that's one of the main motivations for studying CFTs. These are things that happen in nature, and CFTs are the tool to describe them. And I also motivated that in two dimensions, statistical models in two dimensions should have a wealth of CFTs. And one argument for that was, remember, that one way of fishing for CFTs from the point of view of the renormalization group was to start with some, say, a Gaussian fixed point where the theory is free and perturb the theory by relevant operators and tune the relevant operators so that you flow into some other fixed point. Remember that we had this picture of the Wilson-Fisher fixed point where you had to tune one direction, one relevant operator, to get to the non-trivial Wilson-Fisher fixed point. And in two dimensions, the thing that happens is that if you have, as you know, a theory of a single scalar field phi, all these operators for any n are relevant. So it means that in principle, in the space of field theories, you can tune the parameters of these operators to get all kinds of different fixed points, okay? And in this lecture, so this was just kind of a heuristic picture where you should get many fixed points in two dimensions because there are many relevant directions that you can have. And then we have to tune those. I mean, just to connect with what happens here, in order to get a phase transition, you have to tune very precisely, if you're an experimentalist, you have to tune the temperature to be very close to the critical temperature. So you have to tune one parameter, which is the relevant parameter. And so that's a physical implementation of this idea that here, in order to get a new fixed point, you have to tune the coefficient of relevant operators. Okay. So in this lecture, I'll introduce you to an infinite family of soluble two-dimensional conformal field theories, which are labeled by two, P and Q are two positive numbers, which are relatively prime. Okay? And that have the property, and these models, sometimes are labeled M, QP, are called the minimal models. And now let me tell you a few features, and then we'll derive some of them during the lecture, hopefully. So these are operators that have, first of all, the thing that's very important is that they have a finite number of primary operators. Of course, the number of descendants is infinite. They're primary. We have this infinite family of descendants. And we're going to label them by phi rs. So you can label them like that, where R and S, R goes from 1 to Q minus 1, and S goes from 1 to P minus 1. Okay. But it turns out that there is a symmetry. There's a folding symmetry that relates operators with label R, with label Q minus R, and with label S, with label P minus S. Okay. So it means that a minimal model with labels QP has 1/2 P minus 1 Q minus 1 primaries, okay? Another important property that this CFT has is that the central charge. Remember, the central charge is one of the important objects in CFT that characterizes the theory. The central charge of this model takes a very specific value. It's 1 minus 6 P minus Q square times PQ. So that for minimal models are in the, what's called the region C less than 1. Okay? The central charge is less than 1. And just to orient yourself, remember the free boson, hopefully you computed that has central charge 1. So these minimal models have a smaller central charge. And I think that's remarkable that we will describe to some extent is that the fusion, so what happens here is the fusion of two conformal families of two operators of this type, so RS, R prime, S prime. If I bring these guys together, you get precisely an operator in that set. So some alpha beta, where alpha beta is inside the set. Notice that this is very different than what you would get in, if you do the analog procedure for, say, SU2 angular momentum. Here, essentially, what you're doing is you're multiplying two operators, and the statement that we will see is that you can only get a finite number of operators so that you have a closed set of operators, and you never get out of it. This is very different, for example, to the analog thing that happens when you do angular momentum, where if you multiply spin J1 and spin J2. Here you can get spin J3. But essentially, J3 can run over any range. By increasing J1 and J2, I can increase J3 arbitrarily. But for minimal models, what happens is that there is a truncation. Essentially, this label can go as high as P and Q, essentially. Okay? And we'll come back to this. But, I'm just highlighting some of the main properties. So let me give you a couple of simple examples of the minimal models and how they're related to things that you know, or at least some of the things that you know. So there is the M4T model. This guy describes the critical behavior of the two-dimensionalizing model. If you plug the formula, it has central charge 1/2, okay? Everyone is more or less familiar with the two-dimensionalizing model. I shouldn't say much about this, but actually tomorrow, the lecture will be actually devoted to completely solving the Ising models. Maybe if people remember, this is a statistical lattice model where you have spins at each side on the lattice, on a rectangular lattice, and the spins interact with each other with nearest neighbor interactions. So you have, at a given lattice side, you have a spin here that interacts with all the various neighbors, like that, okay? And this guy has a phase transition at some particular value of the temperature. And this conformal field theory describes the critical behavior of that behavior, yes?
Animal models, is it P minus Q squared over P cubed? What's the...
Yes, six times P minus Q squared divided by P.
I just could read the bit.
Yeah.
It says P minus Q, and then it's P, Q on the bottom.
Yes. So maybe I should write just to remind you the Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian of this thing is some energy scale, summing over all nearest neighbors. That's what this symbol means. The spin of I and the spin of J. And in general, you can also turn on a magnetic field. That couples to the spin like that, okay? And the spectrum of the CFT, of this CFT, following that logic, has three operators, which can be parameterized by phi 1 1, phi 2 2, and phi 2 1. And this guy, I mean, you always have the identity operator in any CFT, so this is the identity. You have a guy that we call sigma, for obvious reasons, and epsilon. This guy is called sometimes the energy operator. And the dimension that they have is 0, 1/16, and 1/2. 1/2, yes. And the interpretation that these operators have with respect to the Ising model is that this sigma is the continuum version of the spin. And this epsilon, that's why it's called an energy operator, roughly speaking, is the energy associated to a small region like that. So you have two relevant operators, right? These operators have a relevant, okay? And the physical interpretation is that, remember that a relevant operator, you associate with a parameter, I mean, you can associate it to some parameter in your lattice model. And in a way, tuning the coefficient of this guy, of the energy operator, corresponds to changing K. This operator is associated with this particular term in the Hamiltonian. While turning on this operator, the phi 2 2 operator, corresponds to turning on a magnetic field on the Ising model. Okay? And tomorrow we will also see that this CFT can be described, has central charge 1/2, can be mapped to a free field CFT, in this case, which is a free fermion. So in the tutorials, you've been dealing mostly with free bosons, but you can also have a CFT with respect to the free fermion, and we will see how to describe in terms of more pedestrian language of fermions, the Ising model, and how to describe the correlation functions of these various primaries, which is what tells us what are the critical exponents. So by computing the two-point functions of the various operators here, we will know how the magnetization scales as you approach the critical point, how the heat capacity, how all the different things that we're interested in at the critical point. But okay, so, but this is not the only example. I mean, there's an infinite family of them, and roughly speaking, there is, for any such minimal model, there is an associated statistical mechanics model whose critical behavior is described by it, okay? Some of them are pretty exotic statistical models that are not. For example, the interactions in the usual lattice models that you're familiar with live, the basic variables live at the, how do you call these things? The vertices of the lattice. But there are many of these models that are described by degrees of freedom whose interactions are live on plaquettes, so on rectangles like that, okay? So let me just give you one more example of a critical model that is not that exotic. I mean, it's a very simple generalization from this point of view of the Ising model, which is the what's called the, well, first of all, it's described by the minimal model 6.5. It's called the three-state Potts model. This is a generalization of the Ising model where the Hamiltonian, where the basic variable, so here a spin can either be, can only take two values, right? In the Potts model, you allow your spin variable to take more than one value, more than two values. So, and the Hamiltonian is just written as something like, that, where this is the Kronecker delta function and sigma I can take one of q values, okay? But the one that's described by this minimal model is the one where q is 3. And just to relate this, if I take Q equals 2, so Q equals 3 is this, is the 3 state. What? And Q equals 2 is just the Ising model. Okay. And something I'm mentioning now that hopefully we'll get to it, if not me, Eleonora will. It turns out that the CFT that described by that describes this model is one in which has an unusual so in this course so far I've been assuming that the left and right movers, the holomorphic and the homomorphic sides, just go in parallel. And this is an example where, but in general you can do more exotic things, and this is something we will see when we study the torus partition function. What you can do is you can have more interesting, not arbitrary, because there are strong constraints of what you can do. That's the torus partition function constraint, modular invariance, that allow you to glue the holomorphic side with the anti-holomorphic side without the anti-holomorphic side being identical to the holomorphic one. And this is called non-diagonal theories by obvious reasons. The diagonal one is where the properties of on the holomorphic side and anti-holomorphic are identical. The non-diagonal one is where you can do different things on the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic sector. And this one is an example of a CFT. I'm mentioning because just to connect with things that hopefully we'll do later. Is described by one of these non-diagonal conformal field theories.
Okay. There was no parity symmetry there, or something. I don't know.
No, I mean the way to see it is that if you look at the diagonal Potts model, it has more critical operators than the three-state Potts model has. But then you can do kind of a, you can think of it as doing an orbifold, okay, where you project out things and you're left with some subset of the operators, but then the subset of operators don't have a diagonal partition function, it's off-diagonal. And then you have exactly the right number of operators that describe the different scaling operators that exist in this lattice model. But it shouldn't be obvious. People get fancy prizes. I mean, the people that did it get fancy prizes for figuring this out. Okay, so this is kind of an appetizer of the kind of, and this the list goes on forever. I mean, as I said, for any model that you can write there, there is a corresponding lattice model whose critical behavior is described by this, by one of these minimal models. So now I have to tell you how, or to at least motivate. Doing the complete construction of the minimal models is something that will take very long, but I'll tell you what is the logic of how you construct such theories. And the basic idea that we will need in order to construct these models and to solve them, essentially, is the idea that what are called null or degenerate vectors, degenerate fields, states, operators. Okay? So we have seen in class that if I give you a primary H, I can construct the full conformal family by acting with this Virasoro operator, right? And in order to have a basis, I can do this. This defines the basis. And what, and this is an infinite family. So now we're fishing for these null degenerate states. And so what's their definition? Their definition is essentially that these are states which, on the one hand, are descendants. Okay, so sorry, here should be H, right? First of all, are descendants. Notice that there is a corresponding operator statement here. You have an operator phi, if you wish, of H, and a corresponding operator here, L minus K1, L minus KN, phi of H. Okay. So the first statement is that, first, it's a descendant, so it's one of these guys. So we have this tower, and we're going up the tower. So it's one of the is an operator that at the same time a descendant of the primary that you started with, but has the remarkable property that it's also primary. Which means that even though you started from a primary, you acted with creation operators, this guy is actually also a primary, which means, so let's call this singular state guy. So it's a linear combination of descendants at a given level n. So this guy will happen at level n, where n, remember, is the energy that this state had compared to the energy of the primary. So n is just the sum over ki. So this state has the property where it's a descendant. Okay, this is a descendant. That's what a descendant means. And it's a primary, which means that it's actually also annihilated by these guys. Okay? First of all, so something that we know by construction is that L naught acting on chi is what? I mean, what is this? H plus?
H plus N.
But it's all, but the thing that's unusual is that it's also annihilated by all the lowering operators. But as we will see now, this property can only happen the fact that it's both a descendant and a primary happens. So chi exists for special values of h. And h will be a function of the central charge, where h, remember, is the scaling weight of this primary. Okay, so what's unusual? Let me just tell you a couple of very unusual things about null states. The first one is that actually it has, so let me list a few. So first of all, it has zero norm. Okay? Is that something that, how would you show this? I told you how you construct chi as a linear combination of all descendants which have fixed energy n. So clearly, I mean, the way you can prove this is that you re-express chi in this way. And now you use the fact that chi is a primary and that ln dagger is L minus n. So that these LNs that you obtain here when you substitute chi by this linear combination kill this state, okay? So that's why you get that the norm is zero. More remarkably also is that chi, the state, is orthogonal to all descendants. Not only is it orthogonal to itself, which is weird, but it's orthogonal to all these other guys. All the states in the conformal family of phi h, 12 descendants. And the way you can see that is compute the overlap of chi with a random descendant. So a random descendant is just L minus 1, L minus, okay, we're using k, doesn't matter. L of h, right? So this is a descendant. But now I use the fact that I can take the Hermitian conjugate, and then this guy, instead of acting here, it acts there. And now I use the fact that chi, by definition, is annihilated by a length, so you get zero. So this is a state that has zero norm and is orthogonal to everyone, and the slogan that you should think about is that the state chi decouples because it doesn't talk to any of the states, to its siblings, doesn't talk to its siblings, decouples from all states in the conformal family of phi h, okay? And this has huge repercussions because in the operator language, what this means is that for every state chi, I can construct an associated operator, chi of z, using the operator state correspondence. And the analog of this statement here means that if I compute the correlation function of chi of z with any string of operators, so this is our usual string of operators, this implies that this correlation, the fact that chi decouples is just a statement that the correlation function of chi with any string of operators vanishes, okay? But this has a lot of information because now we use the fact that chi is a descendant, right? And we know how we can relate, I hope you will know, how to relate the descendant can be written in terms of a differential operator acting on the primary. What this ends up giving us is and we will construct explicit examples of the differential operators. It gives a differential operator for the correlation function where, so you get something like that, some L hat, some differential operator that acts on the primary that you started with. Remember that chi is just a descendant. So that you can build it by acting with your differential operator in the primary times x. So it tells us that if we're in a theory that has the right value of h of c, and we can construct this null state, then we can write, we can use the existence of this null state to show that the correlation function of the primary with any of the other guys satisfies a non-trivial differential equation. And that's, in fact, what we will use to compute the correlation function. So essentially, the point is that you have a whole bunch of, in minimum models, everyone will have null states, and there will be corresponding, we'll have this null state with the corresponding differential operators. Just one second. And all correlation functions will be killed by a certain differential operator. So we will be able to solve the theory by solving the differential equations, essentially. So we'll get a system of differential equations that determine the correlation functions of the primaries. Yes, sorry.
Are you constrained enough to write into your objectives there? You write chi responsible chi of z. Is that a case of chi of z as an operator?
Well, you can think of it as a state or as an operator. Just like this guy, h. Yes, so remember this guy was just phi h. So, and that's true for even for any descendant, you can think of it as some state, chi, or as some operator that acts. This is essentially the state operator for this one. Very simple. Yes?
So that string of operators, is it made up of any operators, or is it made up of
any operator?
Any
operator.
So how can you
So the point, okay, so one way of thinking about this is that you are multiplying all the different, if you wish, representations of the different operators here. So you have an N operator, and you're doing a tensor product of all of them. But now you have to project it onto the representation where the operator lives. Okay. But then the projection is vanishes because that operator is orthogonal to everyone.
Well, it's subject to everything in its family.
Yes, but this operator, by definition, I mean, this operator lives, you have to find something that This guy, okay, this guy, this representation, so this representation has to appear in the product of all these other ones.
Yeah.
And then when I project, it vanishes. Because this operator vanishes on any state.
Because phi h has a different h value that, like, this doesn't mean, but maybe I'll worry about it later.
I mean, about not to have a non-zero correlation function, I mean, then for yesterday. First of all, the right states have to propagate. When you fuse two things, you have to get the right quantum numbers so that they can talk to the, so that the correlation function is non-zero. It's like when you have a cleft coordinate coefficient here, if this guy is not in the product of J1 and J2,
right,
it's zero.
Yeah.
So this correlation function in any way will be zero unless there is a projection onto this phase of states. But now if I violate on this particular state, it's orthogonal
right
to everyone.
Okay. I guess it's plausible.
Sorry?
I guess it's plausible.
Well, so think about this from this point of view.
Right. So there's more to that. Like, if we were to actually work that out, we'd have to do some OPEs within the function.
Well, if you want to actually explicitly that, compute it that way, yes.
Okay.
But I mean, for example, here, in general, there could be selection rules, like the quantum numbers in quantum mechanics. If the quantum numbers of this operator are not suitable, this correlator will be trivially zero.
Right.
But if the quantum numbers allow for this guy to be there, then this is a non-trivial information.
And you're saying that the selection rule sort of tells us that X has to have some representation as descendants of
If in the product of all the X's, you were not going to get H anywhere, it's trivially zero. So there's no
okay, well, that's okay.
Yeah. Any more questions? Yes?
In what kind of space does Chi live in? Like, many of those properties that it has are extreme, but it's just zero.
Well, so that's another more down-to-earth way of saying I'm representing it by the zero vector, or the zero operator, the Fourier vector. But I don't want to. It's not really zero.
Yeah, well,
we'll construct. It's not zero.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering. Like, it doesn't seem to be zero, but it has like lots of properties that.
Yes, but that's what null states do. I mean, they mimic zero, but they're not zero. And in fact, they give constraints. And I'll construct the simplest example of a null state, and you'll see that there is no the X engine, which is zero. But heuristically, you could think of it as zero. And if you didn't like this argument I was making of why the projection onto the descendant has to manage, and the descendant has to manage because it's orthogonal to everyone, you can think of it just, I'm putting a zero here, so that obviously this guy has to be zero. I don't like that type of, I mean, people use it, even serious people, but it's not zero. More questions? So now the question is, how are we going to construct? Well, we have to, first of all, demonstrate that such things exist, that you can construct a descendant that is also a primary, okay? And this is, well, to do it at low orders, you can do it with your own hand. To do it high orders, you need some more heavy machinery. So what I'll do is I'll quote the result of the heavy machinery, and then we'll derive it for some simple example that you can do with your bare hands without public funds technology. Okay, so notice that in order for this to be true, something that we will see in the example, but believe me for now, this can only happen if H takes very specific values. If I give you H to be a garden variety conformal dimension that you put by hand, it will not satisfy this equation. So let me state kind of the result of doing this analysis. So the statement that we get a null state at level n is where this guy is. So I acted with a whole bunch of creation operators whose total energy is n. And I'm going to represent n as a product of two numbers. If the dimension of the primary in the tower, it can be written in this form. As a function of the central charge, The central charge I have not fixed yet. It's anything that you want. You give me a central charge. So far, what I've done here is true for any value of the central charge. So it equals an H naught, which I'll tell you in a second, times 1/4 R alpha plus S alpha minus square. So the dimension here has to be exactly of this form, where H naught is very simply related to the central charge. It's C minus 1 over 24. Well, here, R and S are positive integers, 1, 2, okay? And alpha plus and alpha minus are weird combinations of the central charge. Plus minus over 24, okay? Is the statement what I'm making here clear? What I'm saying here essentially is that if you are fishing for a null state that solves those equations at level R times S, this only happens if H takes this very specific form as a function of the central charge. Notice that here, everything that appears here is a function of the central charge. Okay? So it seems a bit baroque, but it's a fact of life. And now what we will do is construct kind of the most simplest non-trivial example of a null state, which will be the one at level 2. And if you yesterday did the tutorial, you had to kind of already the ingredients to do this. I don't know if you got to it, but... So now let's construct explicitly. So... the level 2 null state, okay? So by definition, I'm is a descendant at level 2. So how many descendant states do we have at level 2? 2, right?
2.
Yeah. So I'm writing the most general linear combination of states, right? This is the most general level 2 descendant. I hope, is this completely clear? Because if not, okay, good. And now what I want to impose, that it is a primary. So that it is annihilated by the positive elements. So it is sufficient in order to determine what the chi is to solve these equations for the first two states. Can someone tell me why? Why I don't have to worry about L3?
Or L4 or L75?
They can be written as combinations of L1 and L2.
Very good. Yeah. So the idea is that if you use the Bilateral algebra, Ln, Ln, N minus M, Ln plus M, plus, okay, the central charge there. The point is that if L1 annihilates the state, and L2 annihilates that state. Since you can write, for example, you can write L3 as the commutator of L1 and L2, right? So if L1 and L2 annihilate the state, L3 automatically annihilates the state because I wrote Ln in terms of the commutator of L1 and L2. And you can continue that way. You can always write L any higher L in terms of the lower L. And since we're sequentially showing that the higher LNs are killed just because of these two conditions, then we know that it's just sufficient to study this. That makes our life easier. Was this argument clear? It should be very simple, yes?
For that precise example, we are already at level 2.
Yeah.
So if we raise by 3, should it be already obvious that it's... annihilative?
No, identical though. Why did you say what it is?
Yeah, because...
But it is, okay, not obvious, it is obvious.
No, but just in comparison with the harmonic oscillator, if we start from the ground state and we raise by 2 orders, and then we try to lower by 3, we are sure it's...
How much of an issue? I think I'm making this particular case, yes. But if you imagine I give you a null state at level 10, then it's not obvious, for example, why L minus 4, L 4, I think that's advantage is disadvantage.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a stronger statement than that. Okay, so now let's solve this. This is very simple to do. What we have to do is, I need the central chart, I'm afraid. No, I don't need it. Well, actually, I need it for L2, but L2, I'll leave it as an exercise, so it's C over 12, n squared minus 1, delta n plus m, 0. So this is the bit of sort of algebra we derive. So now I want to just calculate what the consequences of these are. This is very easy. I'll do this, and I'll leave this for you to do. So what I have to do is act with L1 on that animal. And now what I do is I use the Virasoro algebra. I use the fact that L1, L minus 2, is 3L minus 1. And I use the fact that L1, so this is when L1 acts here. And now I have to commute L1 through L minus 1 squared. And now I use that L1 times L minus 1 squared. You can easily check that is 4L minus 1 L naught plus 2L minus 1. Okay? So that means, and remember, what I'm doing here is I'm writing this as the commutator plus the other order, right, as usual. But the other order vanishes because H is a primary. So H is annihilated by L1. So the term that you get from canceling the term in the commutator that's not here vanishes. So all that you're left with is essentially 3 from here. Now L0 acting on state H is just measures the scaling weight, which is H. So you get plus 4H plus 2, also 4H times eta, right? Plus 2 times eta times L minus 1, H equals 0. So that means that this has to be 0. So that's one equation. What happened to the eraser? And now the other equation that you get, well, so I'll leave this as an exercise. I think it's clear what you have to do. Write the analog of this equation for L minus 2 by just multiplying this with L minus 2 and commuting L2 and commuting L2 through this operator. And the solution of these two equations, so there is two non-trivial solutions. Which, first of all, we fix precisely what the eigenvector has to be. It has to be minus 3 over 2, 2h plus 1. And h has to be fixed to be a very specific value. It can have any of the two values. It can be 1/16. And this will start looking a little bit like what I wrote before. Plus minus C minus 1 times C minus 25. Okay. So there are two possible values of H and of eta, I guess, that give rise to null state. So we have explicitly constructed what the state has to be and what the dimension of the primary from which you constructed the null state has to be. It has to be this form. And now if we compare, I don't know if I, did I write that? I think I erased it. But if we compare to the formula that I wrote before for the dimension of HRS, I'm actually thinking here, somewhere. No. Oh, sorry, it's here, yes. Yeah. So it actually coincides with H plus corresponds to H12, or maybe it's the other way around. I didn't check very carefully. And this guy corresponds to H21. So we reproduce kind of the first non-trivial example of this fancy theorem just by playing around. Questions about this? This was meant to be kind of a simple construction of how to do this. Okay. So now let's study the consequences of knowing that if I choose a primary operator that has H given by that value, what consequences do we extract for the correlation functions of that theorem? So now, let's see how much of this I want to tell you. Okay, let me know. Yeah. So more explicitly, let me write it again. So the null state is this. I will see that we learn a lot of useful information by studying this. In particular, one of the things that we will learn is what are the allowed operators that can flow in the fusion of phi, where phi is the primary with that dimension. Okay? Now, we can turn this into an operator by using the operator state correspondence. So I'm not sure I should show you all the details of this. I think we played enough with this. Let me just recall formula we derived in class. That L so this is the descendant operator at W. So essentially, if I want to turn this into operator, I have to know how to rewrite this operator, which we know from the OP of the stress tensor with phi. And what we already saw in class is that this can be written as some fancy differential operator acting on the operator, on the correlation function that we begin with, like that, where L minus N, I remind you, is this particular. So here I have a string of capital N operators, phi 1 to phi N. So I have A goes from 1 to N. And I get N minus 1 times the dimension of operator A, divided by WI minus W. These operators are located at from W1 to W capital N. Minus 1 divided by WA minus W to the N minus 1 times the derivative with respect to W. So the thing that we already saw is that you can write down the correlation function of a descendant in terms of a differential operator acting on the correlation function of the primary, okay? And now all that we have to use to get some interesting information is just the fact that chi is actually a null state, a null operator, and that the differential operator that represents, that you get, that you obtain by mapping this state into an operator, annihilates the correlation function. And from this, we get all kinds of interesting information. So in particular, let's first apply it. Let me write it for this very particular null state, what the corresponding differential operator is. F.
On the bottom, should it be to the power n, or might it just be?
What's the? Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, thank you. So now using this, we can just very easily write down what is the differential operator that relates the correlation function of the descendant, of this null descendant, to the correlation function of the primary. Some, okay, let me write L minus 2 minus 3 to H plus 1, L minus 1 squared, acting on the primary from which we obtain the descendant times the string, okay? But since this guy is null, this has to vanish. So we're getting a differential equation for the correlation function of phi h for the fixed value of h that we derive times any string of operators. So let's study some consequences. I'm going slow. So for the two-point function, so if x is just a single operator, so x is phi w, you can easily show that, in any case, we already know what the two-point function of has to be, right? The two-point function is fixed by conformal symmetry. And essentially, this equation just confirms the fact that indeed phi of z, okay, let me put here the same guy, phi of z, phi h, is z minus w to the 2h, okay? So this differential equation doesn't tell us anything because it's just essentially telling us what we already knew that follows from the conformal word identities. For the three-point function, we get something very interesting. So here I choose x to be a product of two operators. So here I'm computing. So first, remind you that we have phi z, the three-point function. Is some coefficient, which is a function of h, h1, and h2. And then we have this funny, okay, I'll write one of them just to. And you would know how to continue this. You have three differences, so you have to multiply by the corresponding differences here. And now, actually, now here we do get something non-trivial. If we study the consequences of acting by demanding the vanishing of this differential operator on this three-point function, which is what this is telling us. And I'm not going to do this algebra in your head, but it's completely straightforward. Essentially, what you get is a quadratic equation. For H1, if you want. Physically, what we're doing here is, remember that in one of the tutorials yesterday, you had to show that the three-point function is captures essentially the same information as the operator product expansion of two primaries. As the operator product expansion of two primaries into another primary, okay? And what this differential equation essentially is telling us is that if you fuse phi 1, 2, a language that sometimes I use interchangeably phi h, where by h I mean that h, the one that's relevant for the degenerate vector. Sometimes I use the language phi 1, 2. It tells us that if I fuse phi 1, 2 with an arbitrary operator that has dimension h1, what this equation tells us is that this restricts what kind of representations can appear here. You get phi h2. And now I'll tell you how these different quantum numbers are related. And that's why you get, I mean, the one way of thinking about this is that multiplying a primary that has a null vector in its descendants by an arbitrary operator gives you a truncated OPE, because here you only get a finite number of primaries. Okay. So it's a very specific set of states that can appear here. Just like when you multiply angular momentum, if you multiply J1 and J2, there's only a certain number of states, very specific states that can appear in their product. And the way... So which blackboard is most... The first one, I don't think. You know what? I didn't use this one, I think. No, I did. Okay. I need more blackboards. Maybe I write too much. That's the problem. So what I said there is that that differential operator, this differential operator acting on this form of the three-point function tells us that if we parameterize, we choose this funny-looking parametrization of conformal dimensions in terms of an auxiliary parameter alpha as follows, as h naught plus 1/4 alpha squared, where, again, it's not is C minus 1 over 24. So this is just a parametrization of what the scaling dimension has to be. And we associate to the operator phi h1 the parameter alpha 1, and to the operator phi h2 the parameter alpha 2. Then what this thing is telling us is that alpha 2 has to be either alpha 1, can only be alpha 1 plus minus alpha plus. If H, you have our choice of H is the one associated to 2, 1, or alpha 2 can either be alpha 1 plus minus alpha minus if H is the other one. Remember that we had two solutions to the null equation, null vector equation, and depending on when you choose, what this is telling is that in some sense the momentum, so you can think of this alpha as some momentum, auxiliary momentum. If you did the problem of computing the dimension of e to the ipx in a free field theory, the dimension is supposed to go like a p squared, and p is the momentum. And so this alpha is roughly like the momentum. So what this is telling us is that the momentum of the outgoing line has to be shifted from the momentum of the incoming line by alpha plus or minus alpha plus, where alpha plus I define somewhere there. It's some yes, alpha plus is this.
Okay.
So this is very nice. We've learned what are the possible states that can appear when I multiply two primary operators. And one of them is one that has a null state in its descendant. Okay. So in formulas, another way of thinking about this is that you can write this as the fact that the OPE of phi to 1 with phi alpha is phi alpha minus alpha plus phi alpha plus alpha plus, and the corresponding shift, but now by alpha minus, if I multiply with the other primary. Is the logic clear? So essentially the fact that no states impose a differential equation on the correlators allows us to essentially determine the possible fusions. That's one language thing. What states can appear when you fuse or multiply two operators. Okay. So this was for the level 2. level 2 null set. Remember here, I quoted the general result, that in fact there are null states at any level with very specific choices of momenta. It would be a good exercise for you to, exactly as I did, construct the null states at level 3. So here you would write down the most general descender at level 3. So it has three states, right? It has L minus 3, L minus 1 minus 2, and L minus 1 cubed. And you impose that they have to be annihilated by L1 and L2, and you'll get an equation for H. But I will not continue doing, I mean, I will not do it in front of you. But what I want to now just mention, what are the consequences? What are the consequences that the higher level null states?
I'm sorry. Yes. You have alpha 2 in the previous equations.
Sorry?
You have in the previous blackboard, you have alpha 2 something, then
yes.
Alpha 2.
Yeah. This formula?
Yeah. Is alpha 2 in both cases?
Yes, because this is when I use the primary to be this one, and this one is when the primary is this other one. Because remember, we have two solutions, right? Because it's one. So what I want to just now mention is what are the analog. It's completely analog philosophy and technology to what we did now, but for higher level. I just want to say a few things about what are the consequences of having of this higher level null states. Well, first of all, how would you obtain them? An efficient way of obtaining them is by not explicitly, that's an inefficient way of doing it when you go to a very high level. The way we did it is very constructive. I wrote down the most general state and we constructed it by demanding that it's annihilated by the virtual sort of descendants. A better way of doing it is by, and I don't know how much I should say that, but to compute the matrix of inner products, that's what you did yesterday, of all descendants. So fix, so establish some primary H. Now, first, write down, so tell you the recipe, you cook it, write down all descendant states at level n, and we counted how many of those there are. There are as many as the number of partitions of n. So you have a list of vector, of states, right? So you have 1 up to the number of partitions of n. And what you compute is now this a large number of states, and what you do is just compute the matrix of inner products. So you're going to get a big matrix. And now you can diagonalize, well, if you're very smart, you can try to diagonalize this matrix. These are very big matrices, so you have the matrix of inner products. So, okay, so maybe we just introduce some notation. So if I call a particular state which is labeled by K, and I'm using this notation that we've been using, essentially I'm using this notation that L index set H is a particular descendant, then what we're computing is the inner product of two states like that. This is a matrix. Where the has the property is we are at level n, that the sum over k I and the sum over k I prime equals n. Because it's easy to show that if you have descendants that have different eigenvalue of L naught, they're trivially orthogonal. So essentially you have to do a block diagonalization. You have to organize your states according to their L naught eigenvalue. States with different L naught eigenvalue are trivially orthogonal, and now what you have to diagonalize is the block of states that have the same L naught eigenvalue. Okay? And One way for fishing for null states, which are states of zero form, zero norm, is not by doing this construction of the null state that I've done, but actually is to essentially identify the zeros. So you can compute the determinant of this matrix. That's going to be the product of all the eigenvalues of this matrix. So it's essentially the norm of the orthogonal states. And you will get a null state if you have a zero eigenvalue. Because remember that I said a null state is one that has zero norm. That's what I'm going to say to that. And that's actually how CAC, so this is something that was derived by CAC, from the determinant, by computing the determinant of the matrix of inner product and looking for the zeros, which are where the null states sit. So this is something that's a little bit beyond the scope of this course to prove this. This would take several days. But the result is that you get a zero or a null vector precisely for these values of H. Okay? Is the logic clear at least?
Just to connect with the tutorial yesterday, we did this for level 2. Yeah. We wrote down the 2x2 matrix to get there and then diagonalized that. But yesterday we were interested in making sure there were no negative norm states.
Yeah.
So we just didn't want the determinant to be negative, I guess.
Yeah.
But here you're looking for it from zeros. That same determinant.
Because zero is initiated with null states. Mm-hmm. Negative, in a statistical mechanics, is not that problematic. There are statistical systems that are described by non-unitary CFTs. So I'm being open-minded about statistics not being unitary. But for the purposes of fishing out what are the null states, what I have to focus on is on the zeros, because these are the states that have zero norm. Whether negative or not, I don't really mind. If you want to impose, something that's also true is that if you want to impose, so we have these minimal models, right, M, Q, P. If you want to impose that all states have positive norm, so Q. Requires that, in fact, Q is P plus 1. It's not hard to convince yourself that this is a necessary condition. It's not easy to prove that it's a sufficient condition. But for me, I don't mind if I have not given that
clue. So what's minimal about minimal models?
Well, I didn't quite get there yet. I mean, what's minimal is that the number of operators is finite. But in order, okay, so right now, all that I did is was to T on H as a function of the sentinel charge in order to get descendant. Unless I do something else, what will happen is the same thing that happens with angular momentum, that if I multiply spin a half and spin a half, and I keep doing it, I can get arbitrarily high spin. What happens is that now if I do an extra tuning, so if I fix the central charge to take a very particular value, which I will write down, then this truncation starts. So you multiply spin a half 17 times, and then you get zero. So you're therefore left with a finite number of states. So but for that, I have to do something else. I have to fix the value of the central charge. So let me mention that. So now you have to believe me that the analysis that we did can be generalized to arbitrary level, RS. And by doing exactly the same physical procedure that we did here, which was to solve the differential equation, this differential equation for the three-point function, of course, now, of course, the differential operator will change. It will be a differential operator. The order of the differential operator is actually the order of the level of the descendants. It will be an nth order differential operator if I'm looking at a level n null state. And in the same way that I showed you how to, you could derive the fact that the momentum of this guy is constrained to be the sum and the difference of these two momenta. exactly the same procedure tells you that. If I multiply now, if I fuse two primaries which have descendants, this guy at level 2 and this guy at level r times s in its descendants, they have a null state, then all that you can get is and there's a corresponding formula when I switch 1 and 2, 1 and 2 with 2, 1. Notice that this looks a lot like angular momentum, because this is like the spin half representation. If I multiply the spin half representation with the spin j representation, I get the spin j minus a half and the spin j plus half. Okay? And I'm not going to write the formula, but you can, from this, since you can construct, essentially what this is telling us is that I can get the higher degenerate fields. These are called also degenerate fields. With index bigger than 1, 2, just by multiplying together the 1, 2 field. It's like you can get a spin j, you can get any spin by from the spin 1 half representation, just multiplying a spin a half, spin a half. So the same idea. So in principle, you could write down, which I'm not going to do, what would appear in the fusion of rs and r prime s prime. Actually, it looks very similar to what you would get if you multiply spin j1, spin j1 and j2 in angular momentum. But by doing this, as I said before, unless we do something else, this, then since I can get higher and higher values of S in particular, I can get, by doing this an infinite number of times, I get an infinite number of primaries. So we still declare that this theory is too complicated. So the minimal ones, so the minimal models have the property that by tuning the value of the central charge, which in all these formulas, C was essentially arbitrary, right? I didn't tell you what C was. But now if I choose C to be a very specific value, which is 1 minus 6 P minus Q squared divided by PQ, where PQ, well, you can have this condition, and PQ relatively prime. P and Q have to be positive. Then this truncation stops. And let me just quickly motivate why this happens. Maybe then I should stop. I will not get to the four-point function. But, okay, that's life. So the fact that the central charge takes this value is equivalent, given this formula that I wrote for alpha plus and alpha minus, to the statement that there is that P times alpha minus plus Q times alpha plus equals 0. This is totally equivalent to that. Okay. But then it's obvious, given this formula, that since Q alpha plus P alpha minus equals 0, it's obvious from that formula that H RS is the same as H where I shift R by Q and S by P. Okay. So what this tells us is that after a finite number of steps, I come back to the original operator. So you have a closed system, closed a set of operators. And that's why things truncate. And the basis of operators. Notice that all I used in order to derive this formula is just this fact, right? And just this guy is 0, essentially. Okay? The shifted term is 0. And then I can get the basis of operators, phi rs, which I already wrote before, where r goes from k, Q minus 1 to 1, and S goes from P minus 1 to 1. Another thing that you can show for this particular value of the central charge is that H, there's a reflection symmetry, that H at RS is the same as H at Q minus R, P minus S. Okay? So in fact, you have half of the operators because there's a reflection symmetry. And you identify, so here you have Q minus 1 times P minus 1 operators, but they're related pairwise. So the basis of operators is in fact this, with this identification essentially. Phi RS is phi Q minus R P minus S. Okay? And now the remarkable property, and maybe I'll conclude with this, and tomorrow study how to use these ideas to solve completely for the four-point function of minimal models by solving differential equations. And then we'll relate it to our discussion yesterday to conformal blocks and see how that picture relates to this picture of differential equations. But now the final thing I want to say is that now that we've tuned the central charge to be that value, if now I fuse the operators here, should I write this? Okay, no, let me. You get a slightly weird looking set of operators can appear on the right hand side. So you have phi, okay, so right here, phi with index KL, where K goes from 1 plus R minus M with the constraint that K plus R plus M has to be 1 mod 2. So there are a lot of combinatorics going on here, up to some range which is K max, which I'll tell you what it is. So this is the sum over the first index of the primary. And then there is a corresponding sum for the second, which is looks very similar. So it's 1 plus S minus N, where S and N are the labels of the incoming primaries, with the constraint that K plus L, sorry, L plus S plus N has to be equals 1 mod 2, up to some value L max. And that's what you get. And now I should tell you what K max is. So K max is the minimum of these two integers, R plus M minus 1, or 2Q minus 1 minus R minus M. And L max is the minimum of S plus N minus 1, 2P minus 1 minus S. And now the point is that here we stop, as opposed with angular momentum, which we never stop. So what we've seen is that, and just these are direct consequences of the existence of null vectors for the specific values of H, these values of H. What we find is that just by using the properties of the null states, that we found that there is a family of conformal field theories that have a finite number of states, primary state, of course, there's an infinite number of descendants, that have this remarkable property that when you fuse two representations together, you stay within that family. Yes? Well, I'm saying that this guy, so you move Q steps that way, but this operator is exactly the same as this one. So you have an kind of identification of operator.
But it truncates.
Sorry?
The family truncates or the growth stops, but...
Then the truncation stops.
Sorry?
Well, maybe just the way it's phrased, it's a little strange because...
How do you want to say?
You say it truncates or or you can say that the family stops, I mean, something ends. I mean, the truncation stops seems like it goes on.
It's truncating. It's growing.
I think this is clear.
And also, yeah. So then you're using crucially the fact that there cannot be two different primary operators in the same way.
Yes, and that is in this theory we only have the sort of symmetry. So operators that have that are labeled by the same quantum number, you identify them. But Yeah, what is the theories where you can have theories that have the same age, but are different? Because there's another quantum number that can be same. But this is okay. But here we're doing data sort of. Okay, so tomorrow what I want to do is to essentially tell you how to calculate. Well, in a way, I already told you what the dimensions of the various operators in the minimum models are there of this part. But I also want to compute correlation functions, and then we'll compare them with, in the case of the IT model, that has some other models, to the critical exponents that people computed using the lattice. Any questions? Okay.